Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yes, hello out there, everyone, and welcome back to None But the Brave, a presentation of Evergreen Podcasts. I am Hal Schwartz, and as always, I'm here with my great buddy, Flynn McLean. And in tonight's episode, we're going to get the coverage of the Mohegan Sun and Albany E Street shows. But prior to that, Flynn, last night, you were in a room with Bruce Springsteen for the first time in 2024. It was the Springsteen Archives American Music Honors Gala event. And why don't you tell us what that was like?
Well, I had a great time, or I must have had a great time, because I am absolutely exhausted today. It was the first time I had seen Bruce since last Labor Day weekend, and it did not disappoint.
Yeah, I'm sure it was just a wonderful evening, and I'm sorry to have missed it. I'll plan to be there certainly in the future, but I guess like last year's event, each honoree was presented by a musical peer. Why don't you take us through the evening?
Okay, well, so it was fun. Darlene Love honored Mavis Staples. Steve Van Zandt honored Dion DiMucci. John Landau honored Jackson Browne. And Bruce honored John Mellencamp, which was probably the most appropriate one. And that was fun. I didn't realize that Mellencamp was actually, he wanted to be a painter when he was a kid. He didn't want to make music his career. I mean, he sang in bars with bands to make money and to meet girls, but you really wanted to be a painter. I did not know that.
And I did know that, but
okay,
go on.
And after the acceptance speeches, each of the performers did a song. I have no idea what Mavis Staples did. Same with Dion, to be perfectly honest. But
he Jackson didn't do the Brown, Wanderer.
He did it later. I'm talking about the first section of the evening. It was presentation speech, acceptance speech, and then song by the performer. I didn't know what song Mavis Staples or Dion did, as I said, but Jackson Browne did Running on Empty, and John Mellencamp, he did a solo acoustic version of Jack and Diane, which was just absolutely amazing. Most of the crowd, or all the crowd, sang along, and it just shows that he actually described it that it was a, he felt it was a silly song when he was writing it, but it's just become such a main song, such a key song of the last 50 years. It's just amazing how that kind of how that happens. And then after those were done, then like the rest of the concert continued. Interestingly enough, Darlene Love started off with River Deep, Mountain High, and even though I guess she wasn't being honored this year, but she was there, and it was just an absolutely amazing song. Dion came up, and this is when he did The Wanderer, and everybody was quite into it. And then Bruce did Small Town. He was going to do it by himself with the band. The band, house band, was the Disciples of Soul. And it looked like Bruce was going to do Small Town by himself. Of course, that's a very appropriate song. People kind of confuse those songs with him anyway. But then it's halfway through, Mellencamp jumped on stage. Did not seem rehearsed. It seemed like a total spur of the moment thing, and that was probably the coolest moment of the night, to be honest. And it was actually the only real collaboration, except for the finale of
which
the whole
I thought
show.
Was, I thought that was strange that there was no collaborations.
It was strange. You would have thought that like Bruce and Jackson Browne would have done Running on Empty, or maybe even Steve Van Zandt and Jackson Browne doing I'm a Patriot, or Mellencamp and Bruce doing preparing Wasted Days or Pink Houses, but that was it. That was the only one. It seemed, as I said, totally spur of the moment.
I did see the video, and it did look to me that Mellencamp just jumped up out of the audience. The tell was there wasn't a mic for him, and they quickly rushed the mic out, it looked like, and he actually waved the mic off and wanted to sing at Bruce's mic.
Yeah, that was pretty cool too, and it seemed like I think Bruce messed up the words at one point in terms of, I think he was on the wrong verse and Mellencamp brought things back. Then Jackson Browne later came out and did Take It Easy. And that's another song where the audience really, a lot of audience participation singing along, and just shows you that it's another one of these, one of the more important songs of the last 50 years or so. And then Bruce came out and said, I guess I got to do, we got to do some of these. And he did Glory Days and 10th Avenue. It was all him. He had the horns sounding amazing on both. Nothing too rare, obviously. He was doing those on tour the entire time. And then the finale was all of them singing Will the Circle Be Unbroken, the traditional bluegrass gospel song I'm very familiar with, as being the son of a couple of huge bluegrass fans. And so I felt really, really hit home, especially with the what the center's mission is. One of the core missions is to continue these kinds of musical traditions and let everybody learn about the artists who came before. And so it was a really, really fun night. I'm just exhausted today, so I apologize for any rambling.
I think that's fine. You did a great job. We'll find out. I think one of the Dion songs, if I saw correctly, was he has a song with New York in the title. We should have. Well, I wasn't there, but we'll look into that and get back to everyone.
Actually, looking at it just a few minutes ago, King of the New York Streets, I believe,
was the
song he did. I should look at the same report to see what song Mavis Staples did, but I'm a little too short-brained right now, or hair-brained.
Well, the good news was that Bruce was there. Oh, here we go. Mavis Staples did If You're Ready, Come Go With Me, which is a Staples singer song.
Well, that sounds pretty appropriate. I guess at the start of the evening, the Disciples of Soul did a medley of all four of the performer's songs. I believe that's when they did I'll Take You There. I forget what Dion song they did. I think they did Running on Empty, and then they did Pink Houses for Mellencamp. So it was.
Wait, did Jackson not do Running on Empty himself?
He did, and I think they did a medley earlier, and he did it.
I see.
They did it then as well. That was without the performance. That was just the Disciples doing their thing to kind of open the night.
It'll be interesting in the future when Bruce is not on tour to see if there's a little bit more collaboration. Now, of course, we were there last year. Bruce was not there because he had come down with COVID in between the time he left Newark and woke up that morning, unfortunately. But it did appear that last year there were going to be some collaborations. Now, of course, Steve was being inducted and Southside was also there as a presenter. So we know if it's been a long time, certainly Bruce would have joined them on that. And they also, I think he was going to do Hungry Heart with Darlene Love. So perhaps it's because Bruce was just playing up till this past weekend, and there will be more collaboration when there's more time for that in the future at these events.
I hope so. I think that would have made it a lot more interesting. Not that it wasn't good and a lot of fun without it, but I think that would have added another level to it, that something we definitely would not see, say, Bruce when he's on tour with the band.
Yeah, I mean, when we talked about it, I really felt like Bruce would probably do one song with each performer. Now, I guess he only played on the finale with everyone, and otherwise he really only played with Mellencamp, and that wasn't even by design from what you can tell.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess Steve came up on stage. He was playing with he took the stage for Glory Days and 10th Avenue, but that's not exactly.
I know, I wouldn't call that a collaboration.
Yeah, not exactly a collaboration, but it was a couple of the presenters joining in on the same song. So close enough.
All right. Well, great report. We'll move on to Mohegan in Albany. Stan Goldstein and John Joyce are going to join us respectively. Before we do that, I just wanted to remind everyone about our Patreon page, patreon.com/mbtbpodcast. We're doing all sorts of fun stuff. We've had wrap-up shows immediately after concerts were over. We've got our monthly live stream. We've got Brave Talk, our message board. So check that out, patreon.com/nbtbpodcast. And with that, we head on to Mohegan, and Flynn will do the introductions.
And here to talk about the show at Mohegan Sun is Stan Goldstein. He's the co-author of the book Rock and Roll Tour of the Jersey Shore, along with Gene Mickle. And he's been giving Springsteen-related tours of the Jersey Shore since 1999. That's a quarter century, man. That's a long freaking time. So, Stan Goldstein, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Always great to join you and Hal.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
So, Stan, you were at Mohegan. You were also, because I saw you at both LA shows, so you saw three in a row. Give us a rundown. What did you feel about Mohegan in terms of set, energy, especially after what we had seen in LA?
Well, I never expected the shows to be as long as LA. They were, what, like 318 and 315 both nights were really long. But, I think LA was special for Bruce. Patty was there for both shows. So as far as Mohegan, I expected a fun show. It's a small arena. It's 10,000 seats. That's it. And I had seats front row behind the stage, dead center behind Max. I mean, just an incredible view. And I saw them bring out the champagne bottle about 10 minutes before the start of the show. I said, all right, which I figured anyway, we're getting roll of the dice. And right away we got, the same spiel that he did at 2014 at the second show in Mohegan and in the Las Vegas show this year, which was fun. But he also said something that you are the luckiest people in the world tonight to be here, which is really cool. It was interesting. At both LA shows and at Mohegan, the band came out in the dark.
Yes.
Usually, the lights are on and they come out one at a time. And again, at Mohegan, the band came out all in the dark. And then finally, when Bruce started, when he had Roy start rolling the dice, the lights came on the stage, which was different. And right away, it was fun. The show started about 7:48 p.m. And right away, with the small crowd, he had the crowd going. And then he went into Lucky Town, which was the first time he played it in 2024. I know he played it last year. But right away, I could just see the energy he has. He looks just so happy to be back on stage. He told Jim Rotolo in that interview that he didn't know if he would ever do this again. And I think now that he's doing it again, he's just rejuvenated. And he's just so happy to be out there. And the key thing, too, spontaneity is back. No stagnant set list like we had.
Well, that's, I think, the biggest positive of 24 by far. Now, I want to go back to the band entry. Now, you said the band came on in the dark. Did Bruce come on in the dark, or did the lights come on and you see him come out of the tunnel?
No, he came on in the dark, too.
Okay, same so in the LA. Lights came.
Right in both LA shows, too, Hal, right? That was the same.
So the lights came on, they were already all in place, and boom, they started the song. I think that's how they did it back in the 80s. Hal or Stan, you saw them in the 80s a lot more than I did.
I don't really remember. I know, what was it, the Do Run Run on the River Tour and Palisades Park on Tunnel of Love. Well, Palisades, Tunnel of Love, we know was different than how they came out. But, the thing was, they were all out together and then they started. So it wasn't, the individuals coming out. And I believe that happened in Albany too. Candy's Room opened Albany and it was just the spotlight on Max and Bruce. So it has been a little different the last four shows.
It's interesting because I find the opening in the dark more effective. Now, he had moved away from that for so long for whatever reason. And Stan is right. It was surprising in L.A. when they came out in the dark, because in Vegas, they came out and the stage was lit like it has been for the entire tour and for much of the last decade. And the other thing that's different about it is now, last year, as we know, the show started with really what would be the core E Street Band at this point, minus the horns and minus the singers. They're all on stage. And it actually takes quite a bit of time in the dark for everyone to get up there.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell the lights got, you can tell people are moving on stage. And also Steve Van Zandt wears that, pirate hat or that big hat. And that loses all its effect in the dark, because by the time they're on stage, he's already taken it off.
Right. The main thing about the one by one entrance is to get everybody their own applause. And I think that can go on a little long. So I am not disappointed to see that go and to see.
Well, it was still happening. And in fact, it took a while because it was in the dark and now most people couldn't see them. I was in LA at the front of the pit. And so I could see them come on just in the dark. But for most of the arena, it was pitch black.
Well, my point was that with everybody coming on stage, they all get their individual applause, and I don't miss that, to be honest.
Mm. And it could be a good point, like you said, since he has the singers and he has the horn players, that's what, 9 extra people that sometimes he hadn't had in the beginning. So, come on. So maybe he feels it's better to just get them on real quick.
How was the version of Lucky Town stand? Because last year they had some issues. Well, specifically Bruce had an issue with the solo at UBS. The version that was played in Europe was also a bit rocky. I did get a chance to listen to the Nugs. It just came out about an hour ago. It sounded pretty good. What did you think of it?
I didn't notice anything. It sounded fine to me. And, you know, I was just thrilled that, you know, we followed up Roll of the Dice with Lucky Town. Well, I don't know what he did in Vegas after Roll of the Dice, but, you know, just for me, the excitement of like, yes, different set list. He's mixing it up. We're getting something different. And that was cool. And I thought it was a great performance of it.
Yeah,
you know, he had the crown going. And what was interesting in at Mohegan Sun, I believe it was the first show this tour that Prove It All Night was not played.
Yes, that's correct. Prove It was not played in Mohegan for the first time. Mm. And that's one of those things. I mean, we always talk about it. There's really no song other than Born to Run, in my opinion, that needs to be played every single night. If you go back to 2012, the shows we saw in Paris, many of the Darkness songs were left out. Promised Land wasn't played that second night. Prove It wasn't played that second night. And Badlands wasn't played that second night. So it really does give the show a fresher feel when these songs are rotating in and out. And I guess the song that really replaced Prove It, well, it could have been Lucky Town, but also Seeds made its tour debut at Mohegan. And that's another song that Bruce takes a solo on. So one of those songs basically replaced his lead performance in Prove It All Night.
Right. I mean, I was excited to get Seeds. I'll have to admit it's not one of my favorite songs. But again, something different. Yay, something different. Something, you know, in 2023, if we got one thing different, we got excited. Now we're getting a bunch of things different. And you never know, it seems, what we're going to get, which is exciting. And he's audibling at times, too. But Seeds went over well with the crowd.
Now, speaking of something different, what really struck me about the first 6 songs of Mohegan is that they were all post-84 with the dropping of Prove It. Everything is post-84, and I can't think of a single show from the last 25 years that featured 6 songs in a row after the classic era. What about you guys?
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a good point. Really good point.
Well, I would still consider 85 to be the classic era, but I know what you're saying. And Seeds, do we want to count that? I guess it's not really a Born in the USA track, because even though it's from those sessions, I don't think the audience necessarily associates that.
Well, yes, it came out on the live box a year after the tour ended. But even if we discount Seeds, if we want to say that's from the 84-85 era, you still got 5 songs in a row post 84. And that's, again, that's still a long streak that I can't think of a song from the last, a show rather, from the last 25 years that had that.
That is very rare.
Yeah. Well, isn't that great though?
It is. It's something different. We're not getting, different. Prove It, Prove It Night, No Surrender every show now.
I was never one of those people. Ooh, you can't criticize Bruce. This is what he's doing. And no matter what he does, it's the greatest show ever. Yes, I always said it's a great show. No one's saying it's not. But for those diehards like us that follow set lists and stuff, I think after a while, especially in Europe, what do? 8 shows in a row with the exact same set list. And I think for me anyway, I know I got tired of Kitty's Back. I got tired of Johnny 99. I got tired of E Street Shuffle. And luckily, those haven't appeared so far this year.
Well, I think I made that point like a week ago for the people who were criticizing us saying, oh, you say Kitty's back shouldn't be played every night. Johnny 99 shouldn't be played every night. Well, he's dropped them. I mean, he obviously concurs because they're gone. So I look, it's very hard to put last year into context now because of what we know went on. You know, we criticized, and certainly after the Dublin three shows, we were like, what's going on here? And we have to be fair. Clearly, there was a lot happening that we didn't know about, although that is before the time that Bruce really highlighted that the ulcer was bad. But I agree with what Flynn said previously. It's got to be something that was bothering him going back. That's the only thing that could explain, I think, really what went on last year with the lack of change and songs not being played after they were rehearsed. I know people had all kinds of theories, but it seems quite obvious to me that if Bruce wasn't feeling well, the path of least resistance was just to play the show that he knew and that he had locked in.
Yeah, absolutely. Except MetLife Stadium, we got a little bit of a mixture. Yeah.
He was going to power through those no matter what it took.
And he told Jim Rotolo when he left the stage, the final night of the third show, he knew he was done then. So he must have been hurting so much. I didn't notice it at all. But he sounded great and looked great, but he said he knew he was done right then.
Yeah, that third night at MetLife, I really feel now, knowing what we know, stands as one of the most remarkable nights of his career. And the set list changes that night, he knew what he needed to do for the Jersey crowd. And I have no doubt, had he been healthy, those shows would have been much wilder.
Yeah.
Were you there, Hal? Were you there at the final?
I was, yes.
Did you notice Bruce hurting at all?
I didn't. We thought he was tired. Now, when I was in Europe and we had talked about this last year, someone had said to me, he's really wiped out. They didn't say that he was sick. They just said that he was wiped out. And I took that because the shows were too close together to begin with, as we've discussed many times. And also the weather was just brutal. So, I mean, when you throw that in with the fact that he was in agony, it's the fact that he continued to play the shows is it's pretty remarkable.
Well, let's go back to Mohegan Sun, the show we want to talk about here.
Yes.
After L.A. 2, where he had Morello on for those two songs, he switched it up again in that second part of the show, the second half, where he did I'm on Fire between Because the Night and She's the One. Now, I believe I said this when we were talking about the first L.A. show, which is that just seems like a whiplash. You go from a hard rocker to a mid-tempo to another hard rocker. How did the pacing feel in the arena for that trio?
You know, I heard you talk about that. I listened to your podcast on my drive up to Mohegan Sun. And I thought about that. And then when he did I'm on Fire, it seemed fine to me. I understand, you know, not going right into She's the One. But, you know, it was like, okay, Nils did his curls. Everyone's going crazy. And then it slowed down a bit. And the crowd really reacted to I'm on Fire. And it's a quick song. I don't even know if it's 3 minutes long. And for me, again, it was like, yay, that four-pack is finally broken up because the night She's the One, Wrecking Ball and The Rising, even though we still played them all. But it was like, yay, that was the one thing I was like, still a carryover from last year. Can we just get something fresh in there? And I'm very excited to see that he is doing that now.
So there was no problem getting the crowd back with She's the One?
Not at all. Not at all. And I did think of that because, like I said, I heard you talk about that, but no, not at all.
All right, cool.
Now, in the encores of Mohegan, it was interesting because there was no song prior to Born to Run, which is also something we've talked about, and there was also no bonus song after 10th Avenue, so a bit shorter encore set than certainly he had done in L.A.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting on the printed set list for Mohegan, Night Shift was not on there, and Land of Hope and Dreams was on the set list to start the encores. But he did not play. He did play Night Shift in its normal spot. And he did not do Land of Hope and Dreams. It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the six song encore, basically the same. Born to Run, Rosalita, Bobby Jean. It's either Bobby Jean or Glory Days, it seems. Dancing in the Dark, 10th Avenue. And we did not get a bonus song after 10th Avenue. He went right into I'll See You in My Dreams.
Now, do you feel like the show lost the momentum at some point to not get those two songs? Or did the energy continue throughout the night from the start?
The energy continued. I mean, it was still a 2-hour and 46-minute show. And Bruce loved the crowd. And he was joking around before 10th. He said, Uncasville, Connecticut, where the F am I? And then when he does, you know, the heart-stopping, pants-dropping part, he also said floor-effing.
Yeah, that I was sorry he didn't do that in L.A. I was like, come on with the floor fuckers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that was hilarious. I was listening on the stream myself, and I just burst out laughing.
Yeah, and I believe that's the only time he said that. So, and then before he went in this I'll See You in My Dreams, he said, you guys were great. We had fun. I love Uncasville. Wherever the F it is. Matter of fact, I'm moving to Uncasville. So he was just in this great, great mood and really happy. And the crowd, it's such a small arena. It was just, the sound was great. And I thought it was a great show. I really enjoyed it. A friend of mine texted me in the middle of the show, how is it? And I just said, effing great. So it really was good.
Well, that really puts a capper on things. And Stan, we thank you so much for joining us and filling us in on the events in Uncasville. Did I say that properly?
I believe so. Apparently, he had a flat tire going up there. So I had heard he was going to helicopter up, but it was too windy. So he did drive up there.
I was wondering about that.
But if you saw his Instagram, he was somewhere still in northern Monmouth County. Here in New Jersey, and where he had the flat tire, but I guess he got there plenty of time and still was able to sound check. And Flynn, you both you guys were Mohegan in 2014, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
to the Shiv shows.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, I just love the casino show. Being parking is free, parking is easy. You park in the garage, you go down an elevator, the arena's right there. There's plenty of places to eat. There's plenty of places to have restrooms. So compared to other places, you know, in the middle of the city or something, I so much enjoy that, being
Stan,
at Mohegan.
I'm going to fill you in on a secret. The reason why the parking is free is because they're taking plenty of money from everyone.
Oh, yeah.
They lost their money.
Yeah. Well, that's what Bruce said at the beginning.
Exactly.
They must have lost your money for them to pay us here to get here.
That is very, very true.
Yes. Sure. And I enjoy your podcast. I listen to every episode. I always text Flynn with some feedback. I'm probably a pain in the neck to him, but I do like it and enjoy it.
It's fine. Well, we appreciate your support and we appreciate you listening.
Okay. And
joining us.
Anytime. I'm glad to.
Thanks, Stan. Hi, I'm Hal Schwartz from None But The Brave, and I want to tell you about our exciting new sponsor, DistroKid. DistroKid is a service for musicians that puts your music into online stores and streaming services like Spotify. You keep 100% of your royalties. The DistroKid app is packed with features. You can check your streaming stats from Apple and Spotify, upload lyrics and song credits. You can also get notified via push notifications when you've earned royalties. With Mixia, a powerful tool for those without access to professional mastering engineers, users can put the finishing touches on their track in minutes. There's a simple interface that is easy to use even if you're a novice creator. It's only $99 for a year with unlimited mastered tracks. DistroKid also has a new feature called Instant Share that allows you to easily share large files securely. Send tracks to collaborators, booking agents, and anyone else you want to hear your work. Your music will stream at the highest quality so you can make a great impression. And the artwork files look great too. So check out DistroKid through None But The Brave special link and receive 30% off your first year. DistroKid.com/VIP/MBTB. Once again, DistroKid.com/VIP/MBTB. Thank you.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.
Once again, that was Stan Goldstein reporting on the Mohegan Sun Show. And moving on to Albany, we're bringing in our friend John Joyce. So, John, welcome. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Flynn and Hal.
Now, John, you've told me that Albany was actually your 100th Springsteen show.
That is correct.
And
yes.
It sounded like a pretty good one to reach the century mark on.
It could be my top five ever.
Really?
Of those 100. It was just a barn burner, start to finish. Just absolutely incredible. We've all, you know, those of us who have been to the shows so far this year, we already know that. I listened to your pod early today with David Wilde talking about L.A. And it's and obviously, Hal, you know, you had talked about L.A. number one, that first show. And just more of the same. Just incredible.
Now, just out of curiosity, to give the audience some background, when did you see your first show out of those 100?
January of 1985 in Syracuse. And last year in September, Syracuse was supposed to be my 100th show. And then it got postponed 30 hours beforehand, as did the rest of the tour. So for 6-7 months, I was Johnny 99.
So, John, did you see shows last year on the tour?
All I saw was Boston and then the two at Gillette in Foxborough. So just the local shows for me.
Okay, now, did you see a difference on Monday night as opposed to last year?
Yeah. He was more energized, I thought, than he was at Gillette. But obviously, he was pretty sick at Gillette. Or I guess sort of sick. He was definitely more energized and just more focused. Just wham, bam, no chatter, no nothing. Just one song after another. And it was just almost couldn't catch your breath in between songs.
It's interesting what you're saying about the shows from Foxborough, because those were pretty highly regarded at the time. Now, we know from what he has said, he must have been feeling really crappy by then. But now he does seem to have gotten, I don't want to say his joy, because I think he still had his joy last year, but he couldn't really hit the gear I think he wanted. And now he is hitting it. Would you say that that's accurate?
Yeah, absolutely, Hal. He's just in another gear right now compared to when I saw him in August last year. And beyond that, it's also maybe part of that is removing some of the bloat out of that set list with Kitty and E Street Shuffle and Johnny 99 going by the wayside. I'm not sure if that has something to do with it, but I noticed those songs this year are absent, and I think that makes a big difference in the set.
Well, let's not talk about what he didn't play and about what
right,
he did.
Right.
What were your highlights of the show in Albany?
Well, clearly the opener was just amazing. Out of nowhere, Candy into Adam. We had heard from someone who saw the set list that the opener was hot, but we stayed in blackout mode. And it was indeed hot. And earlier that day, I think E Street Radio was playing a show from 2014 where Adam was the second song of the night. And my buddy and I, driving out to Albany, were listening to that and thinking that would be a great choice. And sure enough, we got Adam. That really got that crowd electrified. pretty quickly, and it stayed that way pretty much the whole night. We also love Atlantic City and To Trapped, just really great stuff there, and Downbound Train, possibly my favorite song on that album. That was nice. And my other highlight was Light of Day.
Yeah, it sounded hot.
It was fun. It what it did, it brought me back to all those great nights on the reunion tour where I could just listen to that night after night. And, you know, just brought me straight back to all those great nights. And it was a lot of fun. You know, did I miss Rosalita in place of Light of Day? Yeah, a little bit. But Light of Day was a ton of fun.
Let me ask you a question about Adam Raise the Cane, because I got a text from our buddy and very good friend of the show, Kirk Minahan, and he was saying to me that he didn't love the horn arrangement on Adam Raise the Cane, and I hadn't heard it yet. And then when I got the Nugs release, I did really agree with him. I thought, and I think the horns have been used so effectively this year on so many songs, but I think on that one, they seemed a little intrusive otherwise into what the song normally does.
I think I could agree with that. I think the horns maybe might be overused on a couple of different songs here and there. And it's funny, I was listening to Lucky Town from Uncasville. I was thinking about the horns back on the Christmas show back in 2000 and thinking how great that was back then. And that was when they really could have been utilized more, maybe. But I can see what he's talking about with Adam and the horns. We have the E Street Orchestra, and at times it's probably too big and overused.
Now going back to using some horns, I felt that they're used pretty well on Racing in the Street, and I got to say that was one of the most beautiful versions of the song I've heard in a while.
Yep. It could just go on forever and ever, and I think everybody would agree. Yeah, any night with Racing is a great night.
Yeah, it's interesting because in Vegas, as we had talked about at the time, it was a little bit shorter version than he'd been doing the last decade or so. But it seems like since then, he has returned it to the longer coda that has marked so many of the good performances of the last 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. And Roy is Roy and does a beautiful job, as always. And the horns really added a nice blend to that song.
Now, looking at the sequencing of songs, you have Night Shift, Racing, Last Man Standing, and then Backstreets. That's kind of a long lull in terms of energy. At least you're not getting a full tilt rocker. In other words, how was that inside the arena?
It seemed to be okay because Racing, everybody was really into Racing at the time. As for Night Shift, I think I agree with David Wilde. I don't know why it's there. I don't know why it's being played. I don't know why, you know, what do you say? It should be on a cruise ship. Is that what he said? Something like that.
David said that. We did not say that. For anyone who is taking notes on such things.
I don't understand. It's a beautiful song. He does a great job of it. It's beautiful in concert. I just don't know why we can't get something like, I don't know, Secret Garden or Fade Away or something other than Night Shift.
Every night.
Sure.
I'm going to guess that he wants to highlight the background singers. I'm not saying he couldn't do that with another song. I have sort of a love-hate relationship, and we didn't really object too much to what David said, but I do think that it is beautifully performed, but at the same time, especially as someone who has seen multiple shows, it doesn't need to be in there every night. And as David put so eloquently, this is Bruce Springsteen, and he has so many incredible songs of his own. And Night Shift is not really, it's not a classic, let's be honest. I mean, it's a nice song, but I don't know that it deserves that level of prominence in his show.
Yeah, and I was also thinking, Don't Play That Song. He started that out early in this tour and then dropped it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I'm saying thankfully. He also dropped that late last year, I thought, too, didn't he?
Don't Play That Song was played a handful of times at the start of the tour in 2023 and then dropped and then brought back. I think it was played, well, it was only played, I think, the two times, Phoenix, and we saw it in Vegas. But I can't remember. Oh, it was played in San Diego, and then it was dropped.
Yeah, the first three, and then it was gone. I didn't really feel a big lull during the show, you know, from Night Shift to Racing to Last Man Standing, because I think Racing certainly kept everybody's attention.
Now, were you just very surprised when he didn't go into She's the One from Because of the Night and instead dropped in Downbound?
Yeah. Yep. And
pleasant surprise, it sounds
pleasantly
like.
Pleasantly surprised, yeah.
I mean, certainly would be for me.
Yeah, some it was very odd. You know, he dropped Prove It, right, in Uncasville and then in Albany. He dropped, well, Two Hearts, seems to be in and out. He dropped No Surrender, and I thought that had been an every nighter, but apparently not.
And then he dropped Rosie.
And then Rosie, which, you know, in turn we got Light of Day, and sure, I'll take that.
I think that as he got to the end here in these final batch of shows, he finally did come to the conclusion that pretty much, except for the most core elements, Last Man Standing at the Backstreets and Night Shift, as we keep saying, everything else is now game to be dropped. You know, nothing is sacred. And that obviously makes the show much better for a lot of the fans who are seeing multiple shows. We were just talking about this with Stan in regards to Mohegan. The performance level, I think, has gone up several steps as well in 2024.
It just seems like there's been a major weight lifted off his shoulders, and now he's just free to play the type of show that he's been doing his whole career. I mean, he's back to full speed.
I think that definitely last year we saw shows where he was not at his best, and they just kept that quiet. That's the only conclusion I think that is fair to make. And, you know, as we've said, the fact that he powered through it, especially the shows we were talking about earlier in Foxborough and then at MetLife, it really is incredible. And I'm just really glad that he was able to get back and healthy and that we're seeing these level of shows, because as I said, when we recap the LA shows, it's really something.
Yeah. When I walked on Albany, I was trying to think if I could change my schedule, my work calendar, to get out to Syracuse and then maybe even fly to Columbus, because that's how high I was after that show. It was just so exhilarating. And what a great night it was. And I'm perfectly happy with a 2 hour and 45 minute set list. If I'm going to get my ass rocked for 2 hours and 45 minutes, I'm happy with that. I don't need 3.5 hours.
And I also like the earlier start time. So
yes.
Well, yeah, I'm getting old. What can I say?
That was two things LA One in particular didn't have. He didn't go on at 7:30 and the show ran for about 3 hours and 20 minutes. When we left the arena that night, it was 11:15. I was like, I can't believe we're leaving the arena at 11:15, because so many shows over the last year have been over at 10:30.
Yep. Yeah, 10:15, 10:20, I was walking out of Albany. I'm like, wow, it's early.
But he packed a lot of punch into that time. So,
he did.
To say the least. So.
And he mentioned it a couple of times at the end. The crowd was just incredible. There were times where the crowd was drowning out the music. And he said it at the end, right before he went into Twist and Shout. He said, you know, you're too loud to stop right now, baby, or something like that.
And then he said again, you've been a fucking fantastic crowd.
Yep.
Was that before or after I'll See You in My Dreams? I think it was after.
It was at the end. It was the very end. Yeah.
Yeah. So you saw a good one.
We did. Yeah. Albany's always had really good shows. Other than the reunion show.
I was thinking that too. Like, that was kind of a dud that night. But
I was looking
sick, I believe,
at the shows I've seen out there. And he's played 9 times out there since that reunion show. I've seen 8 of them, and probably 7 were great. And that reunion show was we'll give him a pass on that one.
I think he had a bad cold that week. So
exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Gents, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, John. We appreciate it.
Once again, that was John Joyce talking about the excellent Albany show. And that's one that I've already put on my phone, and I've listened to it a few times already. It really is a good listen.
Yeah, it is a good listen. And next time we're going to talk Syracuse and Columbus with our buddy Anthony Castrovince from MLB Network. The Columbus show, that just came out on Nugs Today. I was listening to a little of it an hour or so ago. The Streets of Fire there was fire.
Yeah, two guitar solos in the same song, and both of them were just
amazing.
It was
incredible.
Absolutely.
So we're going to get to that next time. We'll also probably talk about the opener, Youngstown, obviously very appropriate location-wise. Didn't think it worked that well listening on the tape, but we'll hear what Anthony has to say. And with that, I'll wrap things up. Number the Brave is a presentation of Evergreen Podcast and produced by Bull Market Entertainment. Again, please check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/MBTB Podcast. On Twitter, we're at MBTB Podcast.
So thanks once again to Stan Goldstein and John Joyce for joining us. And for Hal Schwartz, I'm Flynn McClain, saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, genxgrownup.com. All right, I think that was good enough.
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right. I've never done it.
So, no, right.